Ian Harper, Martin, I'm happy to earn after an affiliation with Melbourne Business School. Friends of Anzac. Martin, thank you for that. You've spoken mostly about the real economy and given us very strong reasons to be confident, notwithstanding the risks that are there, for the outlook for the real economy. I'd like to encourage you to say a little more about the financial economy. I did have the pleasure of hearing you at Hayman Island, and one of the points that was particularly telling for me was your comment that the 1997 Asian financial market crisis was triggered by an event in Thailand, a currency crisis, that most people would have considered to have no potential to have contagion around the region. And you posed the question as to whether the US subprime mortgage crisis might turn out to be another Thailand. I would appreciate your expanding a little more on that issue and more generally what you think might happen with the financial economy.
Shall I answer questions from here?
Yeah.
The point I wanted to make in that, and I think I've touched upon it here, I come rather late to thinking about, in my career, about the financial system and the financial sector. I started off as a real economist, and I mean real in both senses. In fact, my teacher at Oxford was Max Corden, so this seems appropriate whom I just had breakfast with this morning, and I presume most of you know. And I've always thought this finance stuff was fluffy. When it wasn't fluffy, it was unbelievably dangerous, and one shouldn't think about it too much. But obviously, over the last 20, 25 years, I have learnt better. The capacity of the financial sector to make a mess of things is quite substantial, and at the same time, of course, I accept its importance for the workings of our economy. I don't deny that. Now, the reason I'm making this introduction is one of the things I've learnt is that it's very difficult at the early stages of a transformation in risk evaluation in markets, which is what we're in, to judge how far that will go. And I put forward the example of the Thai devaluation, which I wrote about, because I think rather few people thought when Thailand finally abandoned what was clearly an unsustainable peg that we were going to see a 1.5-year rolling financial crisis that ended up in Wall Street with LTCM. Yeah, this is and I can assure you, by the way, it may look like this now, but I used to go to Washington fairly often, and I went to the Fed quite often, and they were really very worried at various stages. This was not a trivial event from their point of view. So the question, obviously, is Thailand in itself was not that important, and all the estimates I've seen of the losses in subprime mortgages do not suggest the numbers can be large enough to have any significant effect on the US economy, let alone on the world economy. So in and of itself, this is not a big event. So the question is, are there potentially wider ramifications, as we saw was the case in the Asian financial crisis, when Thailand went and there was all that shift in valuating the positions of all sorts of other countries and led to this rolling crisis. And as I've already indicated, it is possible that clearly some things like this have happened. People have become very skeptical about holding quite large classes of assets, which seem to have some of the securitized characteristics of the debt obligations involved directly in the subprime calamity. So there's contagion of instruments. There's clearly a concern there's no doubt about that, about the financial viability and health of quite a number of core financial institutions, which is why the interbank market has, in some cases, virtually frozen, and why there was, again, quite recently, this extraordinary divergence between T-bill rates and commercial paper rates. There's a general concern about the health of counterparties. There is an extraordinary non-transparency in the contemporary financial system, to put it, and I'm not talking about that it's not transparent to me. That's not very important because I'm not part of it. But it's non-transparent to actors in the markets. They don't know what's going on in all their counterparties. And finally, there is almost certainly, I think that's more plausible, going to be a re-rating of risk. That is to say, it's going to be more difficult to get credit, and it's probably going to be more expensive, quite generally. Now, The latter thing seems to me highly desirable. I'm one of those economists who believe that risk spreads were much too low and it would be much healthier if some of the crazy deals stopped. So, but the process of that adjustment will make growth, it will help affect credit expansion, affect growth. It may well affect household spending in the US, as I've indicated, quite significantly, particularly if some of the worst nightmares, some people are talking about a 10% fall in US house prices across the board this year. Some people are quite serious people. That's nightmarish stuff. That's a big shift. That's an enormous loss of wealth for US households. And then there is the concern which people are expressing, and I'm not going to name names here in public, that there are a number of very well-known financial institutions in some trouble. So if you add those things together, and I'd like to stress, I don't know about this, I'm just going through the elements, it is not inconceivable that economic historians will look back on this period and see this as a turning point in the financial sector. And that will affect the real economy for all the reasons I've laid down. And there's a bigger issue, and that's the very last point I want to make, which is the point I've written for my column tomorrow. Finished it, thank heavens, on the plane yesterday from Hayman Island. That there's a real question of how these securitized, packaged, this securitization process with these packaging of many loans, which has become one of the elements of our modern financial system, how well that's going to work going forward, given the ugliness of what's emerged in some of these cases and given the complete loss of credibility of the ratings agencies. So there's a question of how the markets themselves will now function going forward and whether a significant part of risk and of credit expansion will have to go back onto balance sheets of banks and whether the banks have the capital capacity at capital to support it. So there are a number of big questions, and all I'd underline is at this stage the right position to take, I think, is one which stresses the uncertainty. My own guess, it's going to be okay. We'll go through it. Markets will sort themselves out, and a few months from now it won't look very serious. That's a guess. It can't be any more at this stage.
Seems a good note for our second offer of a question.
Thank you, Martin. Robert Hadler from AWB. I'd like to ask you a question about two issues you didn't talk about. The first one is the collapse of socialism and socialist economies and the take-up of classical economics effectively in those economies. How important has that been in the growth agenda? And is it sustainable, particularly in Russia, seeing as what, given what we've seen in the last few months? And secondly, environmental sustainability. You talked a lot about India and China. How sustainable is that environmentally, given the long term of climate change, but some of the short term environmental pressures you've talked about?
Two small questions. On the former, I obviously wasn't as clear as I had tried to be. I did mention very briefly what I thought of as the three big turning points in the last 30 years, though there are many smaller ones, Margaret Thatcher, Ronald Reagan, and so forth. And I think the three big turning points were the reform process in China, which was initiated after 78 by Deng Xiaoping, the reform process in India, which again occurred over a number of years, but in which the pivotal moment was 91 and the reforms of Manmohan Singh and Narasimha Rao and the collapse of the Soviet Union. So the collapse of socialism, real existing socialism as it was called in the Soviet case, is an immensely important political and ideological event. And it has been the background for the shift towards generally pro-market policies across the world. And I think it's fair to say that today, though there's a lot of debate about how far one should go towards free markets, and I suspect historians will say we've probably gone about as far towards free markets as we're going to go, that the debate is very much in most of the world between people who think we've gone a little bit too far and we should be concerned a little bit more about redistribution and all the rest of it, and those who are more gung-ho. There isn't really, despite Mr. Chavez's urgent attempt to convince us that Bolivarism is an alternative, there really isn't an intellectually credible or alternative way of running the global economic system. And what is surprising, I've made this point many times, despite lots of difficulties and financial crises and so forth, no really significant country, and I don't think Venezuela falls into that category, has moved away from the general orientation towards the market. I mean, think about where Indonesia is now in this respect, even despite the tremendous shock it experienced not long ago. So I generally think the ideological shift is a fundamental one, and at this moment not reversible, except by ideologies which are completely outside that debate, such as Islamism. Now, the full implications of that I'm not going to go into, but there is no, as far as I can see, no Islamist economic theory, so I'm not sure what one would talk about in that context. Environmental sustainability, I try to avoid this because I tend to the view that the environmental catastrophes that may or may not be in store for us do not seem to be imminent over the sort of time period I'm thinking about, which is the next 20, 25 years. I've read into the climate change literature fairly carefully, but I'm not, of course, an expert in any way. But my reading of this literature is, and it's very clear in the Stern report, that even if you take all the projections and so forth, the real horrors occur quite a long way down the road. I'm leaving aside the question of what the economic significance of those and other significance of those horrors will be. I'm one of those people who believes we clearly should do something to ameliorate the dangers. But I don't think they're going to stop the world economy growing in the next 20, 25 years. Other environmental dangers are mainly local, and they're of the type that developed countries have already resolved. China clearly has an immense number of horrifying local environmental problems, pollution of every kind you can mention, and it's very serious. But if you remember, the same was true, I'm not saying it was as bad, but the same was true in many respects of Tokyo. I visited Tokyo first in 1972, and it was an unspeakably polluted city. And 10 years later, it had all gone. I believe that the pollution of water, the pollution of local air, all these things are things countries eliminate when they get rich enough. And China is actually getting to the wealth level, GDP per head level, at which you'd expect that to start to happen. The only real question about China is whether its political system will be as responsive, but I suspect it will be. So I'm not convinced that local pollution is not going to be, I suspect it's going to be soluble in all these cases. As I said, climate change is outside that time horizon. And the third element, which I have mentioned, is resources. And the crucial set of resources are energy. Despite what I said, I think we are going to be able to manage the energy problem over the next 20, 25 years. But unfortunately, I didn't stress that, the most likely way we're going to solve the energy problem, the commercial energy problem at the world level over that period, is by burning a hell of a lot more coal and without doing anything about carbon capture and storage. So the thing that really concerns me is that we're going to end up with a massive, enormous increase in CO2 concentrations.